Welcome back to the Mawa Distinct Show. I'm Shirley Nordrum.
And I'm Sharon Nordrum.
And today we're visiting with Carrie Tabor.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good. I'm glad.
So we wanted to capture your story about your journey in becoming a quill box maker and your quilling. So, I mean, I'm sure we're going to catch other cool stuff in there, but that's the cool thing. I'm amazed at, you know, watching you and Sharon head off to learn from Melvin, and then boom, all of a sudden here's these beautiful boxes and you're showing your box.
I'm jealous. I need to take time out of my other art and work on quill and catch up to you.
So the next quilling master, would you please share your story with us?
Well, being native, I was raised, you know, in a family, and that's just what we did, and that's what my grandma did and my aunts did. And, you know, my dad, my grandma, having 13 kids and my dad being one of the youngest, I didn't really get to spend a lot of time with my grandma and my older aunts and stuff. So I know they made these things, but I was so young, I didn't really take the time to learn how to do it, you know. And I wish I was maybe 30 years older, or they were 30 years younger, you know, or my dad would have been up there a little, you know, more in the middle than at the end. But, you know, so I've always seen it. I've always known about it. You know, at my grandma's house, there would always be birch bark baskets and, you know, doing quill work and everything. And it was normal. But when I got older, it dawned on me that I don't know how to do any of this stuff. I want to learn how to do this stuff, you know, and my dad really didn't take the time either to learn how to put together the boxes and stuff. So I had to look for other resources. You can study things and look in books only so much, and you really need somebody that can take the time and show you. And when that workshop came up, and it was with Mel, like the, you know, master of quill work, I, you know, almost begged, please let me in the class. He called,
I think it was Ron.
Ron. I called Ron every day and emailed him constantly. Don't forget me. I want to be in the workshop.
Oh, so yeah, I was doing the same thing that you were doing. It's like, Ron, I am in, right? I am, right?
Yes. Even
he's like, how many times do I have to say yes? And I was exactly. Like, I'm just making sure.
Exactly. Even after he said yes, are you sure? Okay, I'm in. What's the starting date again? And that was an intense workshop. It was 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks,
and yeah. I think we still didn't... I know that I didn't finish mine.
I didn't finish mine either. In fact, mine still isn't finished.
But, you know, after the workshop, I really loved it so much, and I just could not stop, and I did it as much as I could. I have two young kids at home, and I just did it as much as I possibly could. Every second I got, I was either quilling, and I did a lot that I threw in the trash.
You too?
Yes, I did.
You didn't really throw them in any trash. You took them outside, right?
Well, yes. I just dumped them. I just dumped them.
It's like, Carrie, how could you?
I just dumped them. I wasn't happy with it, and I kept trying and trying, and I would try different techniques, and I didn't like it, and I'd dump it. And then finally, I got to a point where it was like, okay, I think I don't need to throw this one away. I think I can keep this one, you know, and I kept going and going, and finally, and I still feel like I'm still at that midpoint where I still can improve. I know what I need to do. Just keep putting more time in, and I love it, and that's how much I love it. I can just spend every waking minute doing it, and I like every part of it. I like the challenge of putting the box together. Because it is hard, and it is a challenge.
It is.
And it gets really frustrating sometimes. I literally will have to put it away and wait a day or two and go back and pull it out. And, okay, I'm going to start the box again, and, you know. But that's getting easier, too.
And Mel said that, too, that if you were feeling frustrated, to put it away. Because you should not have any of those feelings when you're putting your box together, because it wouldn't go together right.
And that's true. That is true. But I would pull it back out and start again, and finally I would end up with something that looks like a box. It's roundish, and, you know, looks like a box. And then once I have something that I'm happy with, then I pull out the quills and start putting the quills on. But it's a process, you know.
So you're making the box first and then putting your quills on?
I have learned some techniques, and I changed some things around that work easier for me, and I do it a little bit different than what Mel showed me. Uh-huh. But I'm doing the box, the top and the side first, and then I'm putting the quills on.
Oh, actually, that does sound easier.
And for me, it's easier. For me...
Yeah. Rather than working with that flat piece that curled...
And then getting the side on.
And then getting the sides on after you've put all your quill work, because, yeah...
Oh. Yeah. I mean, I think that really shows that you're growing in your own art, in your own way of doing it, that you, I mean, that's the way it is with everything. This is how I do it, but then when you show someone, they're always going to find their way of doing
their own way.
Yeah. Learning. Oh, I like that idea. We're going to have you do some workshops now.
I would love to do workshops. I want to do workshops.
Cool. You know? Well,
we'll have to talk about that. Yeah. So how long did you quill before you actually had a box in the new McKenna, what do they call it, gallery at the Watermark in Bemidji, right? I'm sure I saw a quill box of yours there, right?
Yep.
So, I mean,
I had two boxes there.
Did you?
Yep.
And it was very exciting, yes.
So how long did it take you from your workshops with Mel to get to the point where you were showing in a show?
That's really cool. It's an interesting story. Because it was 2 years from when I had the workshop and the show. And my sister, who lives in Duluth, you know, we text quite a bit, so we can't stay in contact pretty well. And she texts me the submission form. And said, hey, you should put your boxes in the show. And I said, no, I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready. You know, I feel confident, but not to the point where I want to show it in a show. And she just kept saying, try it, just put it in there. All they can tell you is no. And then you can try again next year or next time. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it and I thought about it. And I said, okay, you know, the deadline's coming up. And finally, I did. I just submitted the information. I made up an artist statement on the spot. I, you know, made up a biography. Okay, you know, going back from Google, what's an artist statement? Okay, and then... Okay, here's what I think of it, you know, and so I did it on the fly, and I submitted it, and I got accepted, and I was super excited and super happy, and I was really proud to have, the pieces in there, because I felt like, you know, I can do better than that, I'm not quite ready, and then having them accept it was fulfilling and exciting, you know, and it just opened up a whole new world of possibilities where... You know, I want to show it more. I want to show more out there, to the rest of the world. And
I know I
show them what we can do.
Really super proud when I walked through there and saw my friend's art sitting there. And it was like this feeling, you know, it was just like, oh, wow.
She did it.
I have such amazing friends with amazing gifts. And this is beautiful that the whole... town of Bemidji and all the surrounding areas can see. So it was like, wow. Yeah. Carrie, your work is beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was cruising through. I mean, it's that weird thing. I still feel a bit awkward in that, I don't know, that museum kind of setting. So I'm like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. I'm like, oh, this is beautiful stuff. Well, oh, wow, this is Carrie's box. I remember when I was going to work and you guys are all piling into cars and going off to learn. And you know, here you are in this really fancy, you know, art museum.
I know, right? I thought the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a place where, you know, you have to be of a social status to go in there, you know?
I think that's what I think, but I think there's a falseness to that that needs to be broken down. So I think a lot of people feel like that. Well, I'm not going to go
intimidated
in there.
Intimidated by it.
You know, it's not for me, but we all love art.
Right.
So I just think that we just got to overcome that and just start going in there, especially now that it's in our community. Mm-hmm. We have our own, you know, native section of that, but also, you know, get to look at all the other art as well. So something I'm working on. I haven't got in there again since, but... And then you did the Fiber Festival.
I did. Karen from the Watermark called and asked me if I would be interested in doing a demonstration at the I don't know the exact name, but it's Creative Arts Fiber Festival.
Yep, or Creative Arts Fiber Festival.
They have in Bemidji once a year. I think they're on their fifth year.
Fifth
year this year. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I felt out of place because there's all these ladies. You know, it's like Fiber Festival. There's all these ladies with their quilts and their knitting and their, you know. And then I'm like, do I really fit in here, you know, making quill boxes? I just kind of felt out of place, you know. But once I got in there and I visited with people and I seen how many people were interested and how many people came up and, you know, wow, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. You know, what? Oh, that's what it looks like. And, you know, I had teachers come up and, oh, that's what quills, you know, can I take some of these quills to show my class? And, you know, I was excited to have... to be able to give them that, you know, sure, take as many as you need for your class, you know, just be careful because they're really pointy, you know, but, you know, when I left that day, I was pleased, I was happy that I did it, you know, because yeah. I was, like I said, I was uncomfortable and I wasn't really sure, but then I, you know, I was glad because I got to show people what it is, and yeah. I got to, there were a lot of interested people, people were asking, you know, how, you know, if I would have a workshop or... Mm-hmm. Where they could learn how to do it, or where do they find the material to do it, and stuff like that. So there's a lot of interest out there.
Yeah, the Fiber Festival is fun. Did you get up and
walk
around?
You know, I really didn't get a chance to get in there.
Oh, that's too bad.
I think next year I will.
It's the highlight of my February.
Well, it's going to be mine.
My birthday month. They have it just for me.
Oh, really?
The Sharon Fiber Festival.
We'll have to talk. I told them that was just too much. Just a little creative.
I was really happy that Karen reached out to you because there again, I think another barrier was knocked down in that, you know, we did have our traditional fiber arts. Fiber isn't always just the fiber from an animal.
It,
you know, it's plant fibers and what you're working with in the birch bark. So I thought, wow, this could be an opportunity for more Native artists that are working with, you know, fibers from the woods to to come in and really be, it would be cool to see like 10 booths there of people doing their thing, you know, even the folks making the fiber cordage from basswood and nettles and things like that. I mean, that's an art, you know, and people that know how to do that are far and few between.
Right.
It's just so cool that people still have
those traditional skills. And, you know, another thing, too, is there's so many people that want to learn how to do it, and they don't know really where to go or who really knows how to do it.
Exactly,
you know? So I think when we have opportunities like that, then we can meet people and we can see who they are and, you know, connect and network that way a little bit, too, and that, you know, can open up a whole new world for us up here, I think. You know?
I do, too. I'm excited about it.
Mm-hmm. I am, too. They keep saying that we have lost art, and we don't. It's not lost, obviously. You know how to do it, so it's not lost, right?
I think for some people, I think some people want it to be lost. I think that...
It's another way of breaking us down, taking away our heritage, mm-hmm. taking away our history... And
just like her yesterday, she was looking for a coloring book of Native's maple syrup, you know, the sugar bush. And when she went online to just look for a coloring page, there were no Natives doing
pilgrims.
The syrup. It was Pilgrims, it was Paul Bunyan, it was that, because I thought, well, that can't be right. So I went and looked, and I'm like, sure enough, I'm like, hey, we're wiped out of the picture again.
Yeah.
So building, you know, that, I think that's sort of an oppressive, it isn't. Sort of. It is an oppressive method to, you know, break us down some more. And it's not gone, and it's coming back, and it's coming back strong,
it
and
is.
You're teaching
it
people.
Is. You and know, and I'm getting my kids involved, too. I have pictures that I was so proud of these pictures because my little boy who's 3, my 9-year-old, I don't really, you know, do you want to make a quill box? Do you want to, you know, try and quill? And no, not right now. And, you know, but my little guy who's 3... always says yes, you know, and I've always been, you know, had reservations because I didn't want him to get poked by the quills or get hurt or, you know.
Oh, come on, Mom.
So finally I said yes, yes. And it loves it. He sat there and, you know, and I'd help him poke the holes and then he would put the quills in and we sat there for like 2 hours, at least, you know, at one time and then a little bit here and there. And I took all these pictures of him. You just involved in working on it and really paying attention to it. And I was so proud of him, you know, and I just...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You have to find opportunities to celebrate that with him because, you know, he could be the next, you know, real master if you start out doing something at an age that young.
And he just absolutely loves it. Every single time, can I try? Yes. Now, so now every time, yes. You know, even though it slows me down. Come on, I got work to do. Even though it slows me down, I take the time and let him do it. And, you know, if it takes you a half an hour to put 3 quills in, that's okay. It's worth it.
Mm. It's just time.
Right.
It's a concept. Not necessarily a reality. But I hear you. I mean, that could, if you're trying to actually work on it, that can slow you down. But I don't think you'll ever regret taking that time to nurture that gift in him as well, because you never know what he's going to grow up with it.
Exactly.
I can't believe he's 3.
He's 3 and he just loves it. He just loves doing it.
So what about another thing that's cool about this work in all of our traditional arts is that the more that people do it, the more there is a need for birch bark. Quality birch bark. Mm-hmm. And obviously you got to have the porcupine, which is most of the time unfortunate for the porcupine because the road kills are, you know, I think when that class was going on, there was porcupine wars because I seen like, you know, Vince Staples was trying to help his wife get some, and I was trying to help Sharon get some, and then
Ron had to have his grubby paws in there.
And Ron was trying to get some, so then like on Facebook, someone would say, "Oh, there's a porcupine," and then like everyone was racing, like
get him?
EMTs or something, trying to get to the porcupine, you know, and so that's tough, but it builds that relationship with those beings, the birch tree and the porcupine. And I think that one of the things that I'm sadly seeing is a huge loss of birch,
right?
Quality birch.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, to be able to find a birch tree that could make a canoe is really hard. And you and I were harvesting in an area that was going to be cut.
Right.
I mean, that was something I didn't think should have ever been touched because it was 80
beautiful.
Acres of just pretty much birch.
It was beautiful out there.
Yeah. So I wondered if you guys have had any thoughts about, in your work with those beings, is there a responsibility or something that's coming up that you're willing to or wanting to step up and engage in forestry and say, hey, you know, these are our traditions, Chippewa National Forest. This is our homelands. We need these to continue our traditions and kind of let those things be known.
You know, I thought about that because the trees, they are vulnerable. But you can cut too far and you can kill the tree and you don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
When I had the opportunity to cut in a place where I knew they were going to be logged, kind of takes the pressure off a little bit. And then thinking about next year, I hopefully will find another place. And not hopefully, I don't hope that birch are going to be logged. But, you know, a place where I feel comfortable enough, because I am only a couple of years into it. You know, I'm not a professional birch bark cutter. I'm trying my best on how I was taught to, mm-hmm. you know, not harm the tree. But there's still a possibility, you know, and I hope that with time that my skills improve. And, you know, you can go back to a tree year, you know, go back and cut the same tree that you cut before. But, and I've thought about that too, where, you know, driving down the road and you think of all the birch and, you know, are we planting more birch? You know, is the forestry putting the time into that?
You don't really plant birch that I know of.
Right?
And I'm not a forester, I don't know, but I've heard that you can't just plant birch, that it regenerates in areas that have been cut. And then I've heard, you know, like right across the hall here is the forester who could probably explain more about that. But a lot of times birch will sucker. So you'll get like 2 and 3
mm-hmm.
spindly little saplings coming up in one area. And he said that, you know, one thing you can do if you're feel like you want to manage a little bit on your own is to cut one or two of those suckers off and let all the energy grow into that one stem to get a bigger, better tree. But I'm wondering if this isn't something that we should explore, like bring in the foresters,
right?
Bring in the harvesters, right? And talk about, have a conversation about what are we going to do about birch here? Because the other challenge that we have for basket makers is the black ash and the threat of the emerald ash borer moving into our area. So we have two trees that if they were gone from the landscape, boom, there goes our traditions.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I wonder if we should have some kind of workshop, like a forester.
You know, I think that's a great idea because there's a lot of people that I've been hearing about, you know, in the last couple of years that are really getting into basket making.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear from other artists, where do I cut? Where can I find places to cut? You know, and that kind of gives me the feeling that, well, maybe they're not real experienced cutters either. And are they going to go out and hurt the tree, eventually promote the killing off, you know, of the trees when they're trying to do something good? Most of us, you know, we're not trying to kill off the tree. We're trying to...
Ash basket maker does take the whole tree.
They do take the whole tree, but you run the risk of ash, emerald ash borer coming in and not having the tree.
Exactly.
I feel pretty confident in my birch harvesting skills, even though I haven't done it a lot lately. Because Josie Ryan taught me how to... I mean, she was the one that finally got me to the point where... She was knowing that I wasn't going to hurt the tree, and I felt confident. So I feel pretty good about that, but there again, that's another aspect of the workshop. Maybe it's a two-day thing, and part of it is just going out with people that do feel confident about their harvesting skills, and then maybe having the foresters come along and watch and see what you're doing.
I agree. I think that's a fantastic idea, having the foresters come out, and maybe we can find places where everybody can go 1 year, and then maybe the next year, and give the trees time.
And talk about regeneration of some birch.
Right. I think that's a fantastic...
And the protection of the ash, because I know I heard a ridiculous, they call things prescriptions in the forest when you're trying to fix things and you're doing forestry. They will call that a prescription. So I heard this ridiculous prescription about cutting all the ash before the bugs get here. And then planting this Japanese ash. And I was like, well,
why would we put a Japanese ash?
Does the Japanese ash, you know, does it splinter? Does it split like our ash does? And why do we want to do that? And why are we cutting it before the bug is actually here? You know, maybe it's... I just thought it was a quick grab by the forestry industry to try to get a bunch of as much ash as they could out of it while it still had a market, I'm using air quotes, market value to it.
That sounds all money involved.
It is, and it's just like, that's the opposite of what we're trying to do in by revitalizing our traditional...
Our end result is, we would like to sell our work and get money, but that's the very small percentage of why we do what we do, I think, anyways.
Right.
I haven't
sold one yet.
You know, the end result for all of my art is to sell it, and I'm sure that... You would like to sell some?
Yes. I do want to sell my art, by the way.
Protecting our way of life is first and foremost. Protecting our heritage.
Right, and preserving it. Yes.
Yeah, making sure that it's there for our grandchildren someday.
Who was your... who's your grandma that did quilt work?
My grandma was Susan Jones Paquette.
Okay.
And she's from the Cass Lake area. I'm from a big family of Joneses.
Yeah.
The Joneses.
trying to keep up with them?
You got that, didn't you? My grandma and grandpa moved to the city. And so they've moved to Duluth for a while because my grandpa's from Fond du Lac area.
Okay.
And then they moved down to the city and they lived in the city. And I was raised in the city, you know. And my dad is Art Paquette. Arthur Paquette from the Paquette family. Lots of brothers and sisters. Like I said, there was 13.
Yeah.
That's a big family.
Yeah. At one time, I think we had like 62 first cousins.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and we were really close because we grew up in the city, you know, and we really grew up close. And I thought that's just how family was. Everybody, you know, your cousins are like your brothers and sisters. And then I grew up and I seen other families and it's like, hey, that's your cousin. Aren't you going to go and hug and kiss your cousin? Because that's what I do. That's what I do, you know. And
if you would have pointed that out, that was my cousin, I was like, really? Are you sure?
I was with someone not too long ago. And they're at Lake Casino. And then her mom said, oh, that's your cousin over there. And she said, really? And I turned around, walked away. It was funny.
And so, you know, we didn't really grow up in that wilderness. And so it's the learning experience coming back up here. And I've been up here about 20, maybe 25 years now. And it really is all brand new, but I love it. You know, yeah. I just, for a long time, I was like, what's my life's purpose? I don't know. Do I move to the city? Do I stay up here? Do I go to Duluth? Do I travel the world? What do? I don't know, you know. And it took a long time for me to come to figure out. As soon as I became a parent, it was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. I love my kids so much. And just, I realized this is what I'm supposed to do, you know. You know, and then I'm introduced and I'm living in the wilderness and I'm surrounded by trees and it's just beautiful. And finally, it just, one day it's like, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I'm totally content and I'm totally happy. And it's just, now I want to learn more. You know, I want to learn more. You know, like you say about cutting the trees and, you know, every aspect of it. You know, I don't want to just harm the tree because I'm a tree hugger and I love it. And I don't, you know, I don't want to hurt the tree. And I do, I want to learn more. And everything, you know, like you were talking about the black ash. And I signed up to take a class. I signed up to take the black ash pack basket. Mm-hmm. And I was visiting with somebody and I was telling them about that. They said, well, how is that, you know, that's Scandinavian. How is that related to Native? You know, I'm like, well, the natives taught the Scandinavians how to do it when they got here. So really, it's it's a Native art. So
that's so important. You're talking about, like, it's like finding yourself.
Right.
Like, so many things have happened historically through government policy but we all have this thing inside that, you know there's something more. And we keep seeking it and seeking it and seeking it. And once you got introduced to the basket, then it was like, so all these things, everything is so connected. And that's one of our deeper teachings, is the connectedness of all of it. So it's, and then along with the revitalization and of knowledge comes the responsibility to educate, and not just our own people on how to do that, but to the whole world, that these were our gifts that we gave to you.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like the same thing with Red Willow. Yeah, they had Red Willow other places, and they did Red Willow baskets, but, you know, Josh Lassley makes the little traditional Red Willow basket, you know, and it's so cool. There's not a whole lot of Red Willow basket makers out there, and they're busy revitalizing that at Nimmo LaPorte School.
Nice.
Yeah, we're actually going to do black ash baskets now.
Nice.
Josh is coming over and gonna do that, so
very cool. Right,
most definitely
very cool.
So are you still making quilts, or are quilts been put on the back burner?
You know, I have a quilt that I
you were working on, a stained glass quilt, you told me.
Yep, I'm still I have like four quilts going right now. One I keep taking out and doing a little bit on it, putting it back and taking out and working on it and putting it back. So I kind of rotate my arts around a little bit. Started the bandolier bag. I'm really close to finishing that project up. I'll show you guys that.
That's right. Yeah. You showed me pictures of your bandolier bag. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was, we were, I don't know, riding to get the birch bark and talking about, you know, I had just gotten the book, A Bag for a Pony or something
that. That's
and
it.
Actually, I think you were looking at it or something, and she's like, I always want to do this. And I said, well, just do it.
I was like, oh, yeah. That makes sense. Why don't I do it if I always wanted to do it? And I did. I researched a lot. And I got the book, and I kind of just am winging it. We'll see. I'll have some people critique it and tell me all the stuff I did wrong, so I can do it again and keep trying, you know.
Did you make it so it had the functional pocket, or does it have the... Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. That pleases me.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe she should be one of the ones to critique right, you so she gets some good feedback, you know?
Well, yeah. That was when I read the book. It was like the fake pocket and all the discussion about what the bag was for. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Native people told you what the bag was for. Why do you keep questioning it? But that I think, you know, the functionality was always there. So did you get into thinking about the width of the strap and all that when you got yes. into it? Yeah.
Yes.
So what'd you go with?
I think it's a 5.5 wide and maybe...
It's going to hang kind of low on the hip.
Yep. It'll go down on the hip and down to the knee. So it's pretty good size.
Nice. So yeah. Describe it for me. What's...
Well, it's beautiful. No, I'm just kidding. Well, it has the four pieces, two shoulder straps, the middle or the... Yeah, I want to say the middle panel. And then the bag piece. Mm-hmm. So there's four pieces.
So what's the color strap.
I invented my own flowers.
Awesome. How cool is that?
And no, actually I didn't invent them. I found some things that I liked and borrowed some of that artwork. But red and purple, it's really, really colorful. The straps and the bag will have the white background. And the middle pocket will be just the black velvet with the beadwork on there.
So. Nice.
Yeah. Sounds pretty.
Have you decided on your what kind of fringes you're going to have? Or are you gonna?
I'm going to do beadwork with the tassels on the end.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
With the
Is it going to be solid beadwork?
Nope, it's not going to be like a loom piece. It'll be just... and I thought I put a lot of thought into that, you know. And what I wanted to do was, you know, looking at the book and then researching, I wanted to try and keep it as close to Leech Lake as I could, mm-hmm. you know, I feel everybody has their own ways of doing things, and they're a little bit different, you know, mm-hmm. with the language and everything. I mean, being between the different reservations and areas and whatnot, but I wanted it to be as close to the Leech Lake style as I could get it, you know, and so there's not a lot of the loom tassels, you know, are the loom ends, and mm-hmm. so I thought, well, you know, I better just keep it with the, you know, even though I like that.
So someone's gonna go, that's a Leech Lake bag if I ever saw one.
Yeah. I'm getting to that point, you know. I've done so much research.
Are you gonna show it?
I don't know at this point. Yeah. I don't know. Probably. I would like to. I'm one of those that I always feel like, oh, it's not good enough. I need to do another one. I'll show my second one and this one.
I think a lot of us are like that. It's like, what do you mean you want to show it? Do you not see the flaws?
I know, right? I know.
I always thought about it would be fun, and I know I'll never do it because I'm not creative that way, but I always think about the woven bandolier bags mm-hmm. that were pre, mm-hmm. before the beads mm-hmm. came and
the weave,
the woven. Like I was thinking about cedar, like weaving with cedar. I was like, that would be cool.
Right. I know there's just not enough time. I have so many things and so many ideas and projects, and I need to find a way where I can quit my full time day job. But don't tell my boss I said that. And
so edit.
And just work on my art all the time and teaching and learning and teaching and learning and teaching and learning and teaching. And, you know, I wish I could just do that.
I think there is a way. I am convinced, talking to all you artists, that is the thing that I keep thinking about is, like, how does the Southwest make their markets where, you know, the tourists go there and go through and they pay a really high price for Southwest art? But when you get up here, and as art rich as we are, there's no place to market that. And how do you do it? Oh. Well, so you're a quilter, a quiller, and a beater. What else you do? Any other secret talents up your sleeve?
Well, you know, I've tried a lot of different things. You know, I've tried knitting, but I'm horrible. I'm the worst knitter on earth. So I gave that up, and I have a lot of knitting supplies if anybody needs them. And then I tried the crochet, things like that. I just different embroidery. I've tried just the regular embroidery, and I really enjoy that.
I like embroidery.
I like embroidery, too.
I can do embroidery. Mm-hmm. Knitting, crocheting.
So mostly things like that.
Ever work with clay?
No.
Wood?
Not really. No.
See, that would be the fun thing about you artists all getting together and sharing a space. And learning and trying. There'd be opportunity to explore other things. Yeah. Because you never know what you're going to find.
Right.
I kind of have a feeling you always knew you were going to make a quill box, though. Why do I have
You know, I always, I have seen them and I always had it in the back of my mind and... You know, I always wanted to do it. I've always wanted to try. It was a mystery, the magic of how it all fits together. And once I learned that and Mel showed me the magical pieces, then that was it.
I think it was her gift. I think that, and you know, they say that you're born with a gift and you know what it is.
I definitely love it. I definitely knew once I was in the workshop, you know, I knew that I wanted to do this more and I knew that I would do it more and I did and I still do as much as I possibly can. I really...
And you have a dream of making your way that way, you're living your...
Right.
There really is another economy out there.
Yeah.
That hasn't really... It was here before and it could, I think, be revitalized somewhat. The Amish guy I visited with, you know, I gotta have money to pay my taxes on my house. But
right, yeah, there will always be that.
We need a commune.
It was a commune. Everything was held in common. Apparently they didn't like that.
We need to go back to that. We need a place.
Yeah, I thought about that. I thought about... maybe opening a studio in Bemidji and trying to make my living that way.
But then it's in Bemidji.
You know, right. You know, but that's where the buyers are, you know. I thought about just having a... I see that in Duluth there's a lot of studios opening up.
Yep, there are.
Down on, is it Superior Street?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from shoemaking to just whatever you can think of. They're, you know, they're just popping up all over down there. And I thought, well, maybe I can put one here. You know, and then just, that could be my day job.
Yeah.
You know, and just have a little shop and do my art all day, but I don't know if I can, you know, it could sustain my home and living, you know.
When you have a dream like that, you have to, you put it out there. You already spoke it. You already dreamed it. You're all dreaming it, so you have to find a way to make it happen.
Right.
You, if you all want it, there's got to be a way. Maybe it's a, I don't know, one of those Kickstarter kind of deals, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of ways I think that it could be successful. You know, you think of all these folk schools that are popping up all over too. Duluth Folk School, North something up there in Grand Marais.
Yeah, and they're charging a fortune to teach people the things that we taught them.
Right.
What?
You know, I mean, even that would be a fantastic idea for us. Well, thank you for inviting me here. I was really had a good time to visit with you guys today.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's so important to capture. Tommy Glitch for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie.
This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.